Ask the MP. Ask the Right Honorable is in the hot seat. Ask the MP. Ask the MP. With Farai on CFM Stereo.
It is a Tuesday evening. It is time now for Ask the MP, and I am Farai Mokotuya. Thank you so much for tuning in. Just to remind you, ZFM Stereo is broadcasting live on 106.4 here in Harare if you are in the capital city. Elsewhere across Zimbabwe, Chivu 99.8, Beitbridge 101.6, Chimanimani 91.3, Cholocho 97.9. I will give you other frequencies throughout the course of this program. But we also can be caught live. Log on to zfmstereo.co.zw. Also go to our social media platforms, Facebook /ZFM Stereo. We're streaming this program live, so you can watch us there or tell people wherever they may be. They can catch us on there, get in touch with us, participate in this discussion as we always like you to do. Engage with us on Twitter. It is ZFM Stereo. That is our Twitter handle, but we also encourage you to get in touch with us. Our WhatsApp number is 0731-168-045. 0731-168-045. Ask the MP is a program that belongs to you as the listeners. It's driven by your participation. It's your opportunity to engage, to interact, to ask questions, and to participate in obviously these discussions that we have. Tonight we have three guests in the studio. Before I introduce them very quickly, tonight we are focusing obviously, as we have been and will continue to do in the build-up to the elections on July 30th. Tonight we're talking to marginalized groups in the elections. We're trying to locate the voice of the marginalized in the forthcoming elections. Are they being heard? And that is the question we'll be seeking to answer today. My guests, in no particular order, Ian Vambe is from Young Voices Disability Rights Advocacy. Ian, great to have you on the program.
Thank you.
Joined by Memory Kadao, she is from the Institute for Young Women Development. Memory, great to have you here too.
Thank you.
Lastly, and certainly by no means least, Isabel Mwanzora from the MDCT, aspiring honorable. Thank you so much, ma'am, for coming through to the program.
Thank you.
Now, as I said, we want to hear from you. We want you to participate. Go to our Facebook page, facebook.com/ZFM Stereo. We are live streaming this program. Get in touch with us there. Ask a question. Watch and follow this discussion live on that platform. Get in touch with us on Twitter. ZFM Stereo is the handle. Ask a question, post a contribution. We also want you to get in touch via WhatsApp, as many of you do from all over the world. 0731-168-045. 0731-168-045 is our WhatsApp number. Tonight we're asking, are we being heard, trying to locate the voice of the marginalized in the 2018 elections? Let me begin with you, Ian. When we say marginalized groups in this forthcoming elections, who are we talking about here? Who are some of the groups that we're referring to?
Okay, thank you very much. When you talk of marginalized groups in this forthcoming elections, we're talking of groups that have struggled to be treated as equal humans within our country and in the world at large. So we are focusing on people with disabilities mainly, the constituents that I'm representing, and we're also looking at women in general. They also have their challenges. So these are the groups that are seeking emancipation day in, day out. So we are here to talk about issues that they've been affecting us since we are preparing for these elections.
What is your take on the build-up to the elections? Is that representation happening? Are these groups coming out of the margins?
Well, there is no absolute answer to that, but it depends from where you're coming from. Mm-hmm. Because when you look at it from the disability perspective, there's been issues, there's been issues that have been happening since people started to register for mm-hmm. voting. Mm-hmm. When you want to talk about inclusivity, we go to the voting registration process that was carried out by SEC throughout the country, where we have seen a lot of challenges where people with disabilities, particular for instance people with hearing impairment, have struggled to register because there were no sign language interpreters. Mm-hmm. And people with visual impairment or people who are blind, they've also struggled because there was no braille material at those polling stations, which is also indicating a problem that we're going to have when it comes to the voting on the 30th of July this year. Because obviously if we didn't have braille material when we were registering, it also means that we are not going to have braille material during the voting process. So it also violates human rights when it comes to issues of privacy, self-confidence and all that, because someone who is visually impaired is supposed to come up with someone that he trusts, but then humans, you can never trust anyone. Because if I tell you to put an X on Isabel, and if you put an X on Farai, then you just tell me, Na Isabel, Na Isabel. You know, so the problem is always there, because there is no privacy for these individuals. So, however, there have been efforts, you know, to always compliment and welcome people with disabilities. We have seen a late entry of sign language interpreters that are trying to come up and say, you know what, people, those who have been marginalized, those who are saying we do not have sign language interpreters, you can now come. But it was very late, and it was also after we had made some noise. And right now, as I speak, I'm sure some there are issues at the court. I'm sure Advocate Abraham Mateta has taken the court pertaining to the issues of people with visual impairment, that there is no braille material. How are we going to access polling stations? How are we going to be effective? So the build-up has been really characterized with mixed feelings. Everything has been happening, positive and negative.
Indeed. Let me come to you, Memory, and ask, you know, obviously you are here representing young women, development of young women. I'll put the same question to you. What are some of the issues that you may be unhappy about, or some of the issues that you want addressed as we build up to these elections?
Thank you very much. I come from Institute for Young Women Development, a feminist organization that work with young women from rural, mining, resettlement and peri-urban areas, which is located in Bindura. So as Institute for Young Women Development, our main focus are young women, and in our opinion, and in my opinion, I believe young women are much, much more marginalized, even as Ian can agree with me, even within their sector.
That's true.
The young women are much, much more marginalized. And I love statistics, because statistics tell a story. There is evidence. If you look at, someone did the analysis after Zach gazetted the number of nominated candidates. Women stand at 14%, 14%, which is a decline. I think has taken us 10 years, if not further back, in terms of representation of young women. And we did an analysis as Institute of Young Women Development, that who are those 14% and where are they located?
True.
And within that 14%, less than 5% are young women. So in my opinion, young women are marginalized, and women in general.
Is it a scenario of there being no takers, or young women willing to put up their hands and say, look, I want to participate, or were barriers put in place that prohibited them or restricted their participation?
I think it's a multitude of some of the issues that you mentioned, but number one is I think the barriers. Our environment and the enabling environment that Ian was talking about, if you talk about how young women can access or can participate fully and access their freedoms in the political environment, we talk about issues of violence, we talk about issues of sexism, everyday sexism that is actually amplified during elections, where young women are told, are called mahure, where young women are asked who their husbands are and where they are, and where young women are deliberately elbowed out of that environment. And we work with young women very closely. I think Bella can testify to that, who have actually had personal experience that they were pushed out to the extent that they are now independent candidates. They are still pushing. So issues of confidence, they are there, but we have passed that hurdle, because we've been trying as civil society organization to address issues of confidence, to address issues of capacity, to address issues of young women coming up and saying, I want to lead. So we can't talk about issues of confidence, but we can talk about the environment. We can talk about how we are making the environment and conducive for young women to participate and in the political space.
Isabel, I want to bring you in here, and obviously being you know, engaged directly in some of these issues of politics. Some very interesting points raised here by Memory, and I want to pick up on one in particular where she says, look, there's always, it almost seems as if, you know, when a woman is engaged in politics, I've certainly have heard people say, or when a woman is opinionated, she puts forward, seems to show confidence or is assertive, people say, are quick to jump to the conclusion that they are single women or divorced women. And as Memory says, you know, you're asked, where is your husband? Where are your husbands? Is this something you've encountered? And how do women get over these issues?
Thank you very much. You know, Memory raises some very pertinent issues.
Mm.
When you look at the participation of women in politics, it is appalling, considering that the levels, or the statistics in the previous elections, women were much more than they are right now.
Mm-hmm.
But then this can actually be attributed to cases of women's bodies being sexualized and this then being used against women.
Mm-hmm.
Apart from that, you then notice that patriarchy is still very real in our societies. Whenever I'm coming from a rural constituency,
mm-hmm.
whenever you want to approach people and you want them to get to come and vote for you, they'll ask you about your marital status. I don't get the fascination they have with this. Are you married? Who's your husband? And stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
Because to me, marriage does not define me. And then there's this myth that assertive women are not married. I'm actually a happily married woman,
mm-hmm.
and I'm in politics. People do find it so hard to reconcile this with the stereotype they have of women who are in politics. This is why you then find women being labeled so many names,
mm-hmm.
so many unpalatable names whenever they become aggressive or whenever they say they have a different stance,
mm-hmm.
compared to what society says should be right.
Mm-hmm.
So this is something I think we just need a mindset change, because once we change the mindset and start appreciating a woman by virtue of her merits, by virtue of what she brings to parliament or to a local, to a position of authority, then will we be able to then say we've come to a logical conclusion. Right now, we cannot say that.
Let me ask you this. When you said, obviously, at your initial engagement, the reactions are, as you've said, people are taken aback or certainly are dismissive. Do you see that there's a change, or do you experience a change in people's outlook and thinking when you express to them your ideas, the value that you want to create for them, the way you want to represent them? When you get that opportunity to engage beyond the initial saying I'm a woman, do they change when they see the substance that you have?
Yes, they do change, but it's at a snail's pace. It's not as fast as we would want, because I want someone to understand where I'm coming from by virtue of me just coming to them and saying, comrades, this is what I'm representing. Not by virtue of me being a married woman who has come in a rural constituency and saying, please vote for me.
Mm-hmm.
This marriage thing, this status should not be used as a, you know, as a guideline or as a yardstick of how I would want to be perceived by society.
So we've established what some of the challenges are, some of them very common, and we've spoken about them previously, and I know that they will continue to come up. I want to come back now, Ian, and ask, to what level has there been willingness to engage or openness to actually say, okay, we are aware of the challenges, Braille, we are aware of interpreters and all these things, and the willingness to now say, let's accommodate. It may not be the best case scenario, because we should have done this from the initiation of the process, but we're now willing to find how we can assist and make this a more inclusive process for everyone.
To be honest, I really think this is only people who are not really concerned, because election is not something that happens unprepared. it's something that we have been aware of since 2013, that we're going to have elections in the next 5 years. So it really means that people have enough time to prepare for the elections, to know what is needed, how are we going to carry it out. So the problem always comes when things are done last minute. Obviously, there are going to be some errors, there are going to be some people who are left out and all that. So for me, I really believe that for persons with disabilities who are very much marginalized, we have faced a very big challenge in terms of how then can we be active in politics, in participating at a probably indirectly in politics. But however, we've also seen positives coming up, because we have had a number of people with disabilities engaging who are also taking up posts to be, you know, councillors, MPs. For instance, we have Henry Kifanga, who is the MP in Chivi, who is an aspiring MP in Chivi. Then we also have Gomo, who is in Rua. We have Nyasha Nau, who is in Chitungiza. We have a lot of guys who are also trying to make up, you know. I think the best way to do it is when we have enough representation in parliament, then these guys are in a position to influence policy, they're in a position to voice our concerns so that everyone can be heard. Because when you also look at how the society has been receiving disabled people who are campaigning, it's been a challenge, because there's an attitude to disability pertaining to, can you bring something that we want in our constituency? So it's been a challenge for these guys who are campaigning, because people are really failing to see the individual first before they see the disability. Mm-hmm. Because people are always viewing the disability like, this guy in a wheelchair, or this guy who is very short, those people with dwarfism. Or they see those all kinds of disabilities before they see the person. Mm-hmm. So for my fellow comrades who are campaigning, there's been a challenge on how they are being received by the society, because the society believes different things when it comes to disability. It's a case, something that is not even supposed to be here. But you know what? These comrades are carrying on, and the fight is on. So I really wish them well, that if they might make it to parliament, that would be the beginning of something new. Mm-hmm.
Let me ask you this. I saw you nodding and taking notes as, Ian was talking memory. I know you obviously want to add on to that, but there is this, and as you were speaking, I was saying, look, the unfortunate thing with the way politics is done or has been done in in Zimbabwe traditionally is that there are a few dominant faces and names and political organizations that they dominate, they get all the coverage, the attention is put on them, and everyone else is sort of relegated to the periphery. No one really matters. True. And so you talk of issues of disability, people say, look, okay, we'll deal with that later, maybe next election. For now, over these issues. Mm-hmm. Can we ever change that?
Thanks, Farai. I think that's a very pertinent question that you asked. Bella also mentioned something about changing our mindsets in terms of how we do politics, how we think it, how we envision it. There's a real challenge to Zimbabweans to change their mindset if we are to go forward, and if we are to have leaders that we deserve, and if we are to have leaders that actually serve the people. So we have to change the mindset, and we can only do that by continuously challenging and continuously talking about the issues. You're right that the field is not level if it comes to visibility, if you go to the media and we take the statistics. They are always tilted, and they are in favor of one person versus the other. So I think I'm a very optimistic person, young woman, because I think we have seen, in terms of our advocacy work, we have seen positive change in terms of the struggles or the barriers or the challenges that we've always faced. So we don't give up. We keep pushing and knocking at those doors. But one thing that I wanted to emphasize on before I give the chances to others to talk about is about election is about improving people's lives. Mm. It's about improving our lives as Zimbabweans. But it's very sad that even every electoral cycle, the challenges and sometimes the barriers are amplified. Mm. We talked about, you asked the question about, has they been changed? And I was nodding because with Ian, I think we share same frustrations as young women and as well as the disability sector, mm-hmm. in terms of how we are taken serious and how our issues are tabled at the table. Because you, if you go back and you if you track what have we have been tabling before ZAG, before Parliament, before political parties, are the same issues of representation and being included in these spaces. And we have political parties and even the government itself, the state, blatantly disregarding constitutional sections in their own constitutions. If we talk about the quotas, when they come to you, these MPs, like the potential candidates, Bella, for example, I'm sorry, my sister, you are the closest example. They promise heaven and earth. They tell you, we are going to do this, we are going to do that, we have this quota for the disabilities, we've got this quota for the minority groups. But when we go back, because they sign these peace pledges, they sign the commitment that they are going to include women. But then when we, what's actually on the ground is not what they are saying, is not what's in their manifestos. Mm-hmm. But there has to be a mindset shift. There has to be commitment and some seriousness in terms of our leadership.
Let me come to you, and I want to ask this question and understand, Isabel, you made mention of the fact that you're in a rural constituency. Not necessarily that when we talk about rural communities, they are marginalized in the way that we've been talking about here, but I certainly get the sense that, you know, the status of rural communities or rural people is elevated only at election time because of the numbers that perhaps they bring. But also some people may say, look, and I look at it and say, look, as much as we can say that it's level, we are being equitable, there still is a lot of bias in terms of information, in terms of education, in terms of resources that is put into urban areas. So a lot of the things that we hear and see here in the urban areas may not necessarily be going out there to the rural communities. Education, awareness, those sort of issues. What is the status and what is the feeling of these people in urban areas? Do they get the sense that, it's 5 years again, we are now here, we're going to be promised all sorts of things, we'll be offered a few goodies, and then people will disappear again and then come back to us when they want our numbers?
The people in the rural areas right now are saying, you only find our worth, or you only get to understand that we are important when you want us to elect you. Mm-hmm. When you look at everyone who is campaigning right now, they'll make their campaign extensive 2 years before the election. That's when they'll go back to the electorate and say, I promise you this, I promise you that. So right now, the rural constituency is just doubting all political parties, because whenever they elect people, these people then start doing this parliament business in Harare, mm-hmm. instead of coming back to the constituency and hearing what the constituency really needs. Mm-hmm. So right now they're saying, because of the level of poverty right now, they're saying, finally, it's election time. At least we'll get some cups of rice. Mm-hmm. But when you get that cup of rice, you're only able to then feed your family for just a day or two. Mm-hmm. What will you do for the next 5 years? Mm-hmm. You see now. So I also want to confirm what Memory was talking about on quota systems. At least the disabled have a seat in Senate. Is it Senate or Parliament?
Senate, which, actually.
In Senate, uh-huh. which is reserved for the disabled. Uh-huh. But is it enough?
Yeah.
And when you look at someone who's disabled, who is 25 years old and aspires for public office, they automatically do not qualify in Senate. True. Because you have to be 40 years and above. How then will those voices be heard if you are putting people who are much older or in a different generation to then try and relate to this constituency of the young disabled person? Still on quarters, you then find that we have the women's quota, where women are being given 60 seats in parliament. But it was a very good initiative. It has its loopholes, but at least women got something. But someone just thought that it was normal to put a ceiling on it and say, we're just giving you 10 years. I don't know how in their minds they thought that the historical imbalance, which has been there for time immemorial, would be corrected in just 10 years. And then say women are now having a level playing field with the men. Then you then go back to the political parties. They have this quota system. It was initially made for empowering women, so that whoever benefits from the PR seat would then choose a constituency, because they'll at least have a few resources to then get a proper contesting constituency. But right now, I can just, from the top of my head, I can just look at people like Paulina Mpariwa. Mm-hmm. She has been in parliament for the past 20-something years. Mm-hmm. She had a constituency, Mfakose, but she decided to leave that constituency and come back to PR. Mm-hmm. Now she's number one on the PR list in the MDC Alliance. This defeats the whole purpose of a women's quota.
Sure.
Because now the people who are supposed to be empowered by this quota are not getting the opportunity anymore. Mm-hmm. Instead, we are just recycling the older women who have always been there, who have actually benefited much more than the younger women. So it's just a sorry state right now.
So let me ask you this. An MP is there to represent their constituents, their area, and so they should, if you know, in reality, be the voice, ideally be the voice of their 10,000 or however many people are there. And so if we have a seat that is, or seats that are reserved for the disabled in the Senate, it may not be a 25-year-old Isabel, but that person should be able to hear the issues that are affecting these people and be their voice and represent them. Why isn't that happening?
Well, for a start, this started actually in the 2013 elections. We had two seats reserved for the senators, and we have had Senator Mashawakure and Senator Shiri, whose term has actually come to an end. This was something that started in Zimbabwe. It was actually one of its kind for a start. But we are saying this is not enough, because in the Senate, it's really, I would say, something that is next to ineffective when it comes to actual representation, because issues are debated in parliament. People get down to their constituents that they are representing. But I would also want to agree with what Isabel said. You know, for women, they've had those 60 seats, you know, reserved for them. For me, this was a way of a country that is trying to emancipate women. And if the government could also do the same, if we're saying we're going to have 60 seats or whatever number for persons with disabilities whom they're going to come into parliament, this also means that we're going to have more and more issues discussed from various positions for those people who have been reserved. But as long as we say we're going to have these two seats, Anangaraku Senate, whereas issues are discussed very much in the parliament, and those MPs are the ones that go to the people, talk to them, interact with them, get their issues and come back to parliament, discuss them. It's always a challenge now when it comes to this segregated segment. How then is the country planning, or how then is the country strategizing in terms of emancipating this group? But however, like I've mentioned before, I'm very happy when it comes to how people have taken, you know, their, like, with or without reserved seats, we're going to campaign, we're going to make it. But I believe in the next election, it has to be something that we are going to make. I believe when we had our interface with the president, it's one of the issues that was so much raised, that if you happen to go back to the parliament again, we want seats to be reserved, just like what happened for women.
Let me ask this, and it's to all of you, but to what extent really then? Because I want to then, you know, question what you're saying further. Yes, you want these seats. Yes, you want more representation. So if it goes up from 2 to 5, if they're in parliament, we know that we have a parliamentary system that is based on whipping, that people will go in there, that they'll tow a party line. To what extent really are you getting the representation if this person is then, in more cases than not, you know, forced to tow a party line? Will they necessarily give you the representation that you need? And that is to the entire panel. If those women are there but are pushing or are forced to vote on parties and lines, are they really then giving you the deal, that the real representation that you want? And to you, Memory, as you well, let me let you answer that first, and then I've got a few other questions I'd like to put. But you know, based on those dynamics, because that is the political reality we have, mm-hmm. will getting more seats, getting more women, really give the representation, or is it just on paper?
Okay. Thanks, Farai, once again. I think you are asking the hard questions that we need to give answers to every day. I think you're right. That's the political reality that we have, and it's a way of how we do politics. Mm. It's a way of how we engage even at a micro level in our communities. And this is why I think during election time you hear people talking about how Zimbabwe environment is such a polarized environment, where either you are either this, you're not. There is no in between. If you're an in between, you don't fit. You're divergent. You're an outcast, and people do not like to associate with you. And this is why sometimes even independent candidates are shunned because people believe in either or. You show your colors. That's what they say. So you are right. You ask pertinent questions. That's the political reality. That sometimes we even ask ourselves: is there representation? Is there inclusivity? And are people really being honest? And are people issues represented in parliament? But I think, as much as it is a challenge, I think it's a minimalist view or analysis of how the role of a member of parliament is, and even a senator or a councillor. They do other responsibilities and jobs outside maybe arguing politically sensitive issues and voting. Yes, because you see, there's a lot of work that happens and a lot of bills that are important to us that go through parliament, that councillors discuss in full council meetings as well as senators. So if you talk about representation and being included at that level, seriously, I think if, for example, let me give an example. If you're talking about a councillor and if you're talking about gender-responsive service delivery, and if the room is full of men and we're talking about the distance to a mother's shelter, for example, perhaps that might not really matter to them than it can matter to me, because I'm a woman, I have a womb, I have intentions of using it. So I'll think about anything less than 2 kilometers is ridiculous. Maybe with men it will be like, as long as it's there, they've ticked their box. But with me, I'm consciously thinking about, I'm a woman, I am pregnant, is this practical when it happens?
And so the point I was going to bring, which I think I'll bring now to, again, both you and Isabel, is there, maybe not ideal, but do you think that women still don't have a voice, even if not in parliament, but through pressure groups and organizations such as yourself, which are able to see that, look, this is a travesty of what should be happening, and so are able to put that pressure and hold parliamentarians to account and agitate and be activists for some of these things?
There is no greater representation and being had, Farai, than sitting at the table. We need to sit at the table. It's our right. We need to be in parliament. We need to be councillors. And for over years, people have been speaking on our behalf. But it's our right. We need to be sitting at the table and making those decisions by ourselves and for ourselves. And nothing is for us without us. There is no compromise.
Isabel?
Reinforcing what Memory has said, when we look at what's happening right now, we desperately need women participation. And this war cannot be won on just one front. We are trying to push on different fronts. We have civic organizations trying to put across women issues. We have parliament trying to do the same thing. We have political parties doing the same thing, because this issue of women participation, it has so many aspects to it. It's a complicated thing because it has so many tendrils. So when we, even if we have so many activists, how will they make effective change if they are not part of the decision making? Because the decisions are being made in council, the decisions are being made in parliament. If our voice could be heard better in Parliament where the buck stops, at least would know that women issues are being attended to.
Indeed. Get in touch with us. Have your say, make a comment, ask a question, and contribute to this discussion. We are speaking tonight about marginalized groups in elections. Are we indeed hearing those voices? I'll be taking some of those contributions and questions that have come through via our various platforms after this break. We're going to take a short break. It is Ask the MP. It is only on ZFM Stereo, my station, your station. Keep it here. We'll be back very, very shortly, and we want to hear from you. Get in touch with us via Facebook, where we are, you know, streaming live, via Twitter, or also via WhatsApp 0731-168-045. Ask the MP. We'll be right back. Stay tuned. Welcome back to the program, Ask the MP. Tonight we're talking about marginalized groups and finding out, you know, what the issues are and how they can be addressed as we head towards those elections on July 30th. As I said earlier, I'll remind you where you can catch ZFM in Gweru 104.3, Kadoma 105.2, Kumakomo Yokwamtare 95.4, in Blaya, the City of Kings 106.7. You can also, as I said, engage with us stream live, but we're also streaming this program live on Facebook. So go to our Facebook page, facebook.com/ZFM Stereo, and you can watch live as well as contribute and participate. Get in touch via WhatsApp 0731-168-045. My guest in the studio tonight, Isabel Monzora, is from the MDCT, Memory Kadau Institute for Young Women Development, and Ian Vambe, Young Voices Disability Rights Advocacy. One of the issues that has certainly come up before we went to the break was the fact that there is a need to change mindsets, to change how politics is done in Zimbabwe. And certainly, you know, that points to the fact that perhaps the current crop of politicians really don't appreciate some of these issues, that they are paying lip service to them, that they'll say them because, you know, I think the point that was made earlier that they want to tick a box, or, you know, they want to be politically correct, but are not necessarily sincere or genuine. How do we hold them to account to say, look, if you don't do this, then, you know, we won't vote for you, or you will lose this voting block. You know, those are some of the issues, because I think elsewhere, you look at politics in different areas, you know, people want to appeal. In America, for instance, you want to appeal to the Hispanic vote. You want to appeal to this vote. So is there a way we can actually say, you know what, candidate X or Y, if you don't do this, or if you don't promise to do this, then forget about getting our support. Memory?
So I think we've been trying and pushing for that. We are definitely 52% of the country's population, and at the intersection of that, these young women, and the statistics released by SEC actually show that this year's vote stands at between 3 million and 3 million plus and 2 million plus female in favor of the female vote, and at the intersection of that, young people. So we've been, I think, trying with positive impact in terms of, I think, raising that consciousness that people are aware that they yield so much power in terms of raising a citizen instead of a voter, where you actually deliberately raise consciousness that you are a citizen first before you become a voter. And when you're citizens, your rights run infinity forever. You have your rights, you have your freedoms, you have your power. So I think that's a very good call, a decent call, in terms of, I think, for young women and the disability sector and women in general, perhaps to come together and say, you know, look, these are our demands, and if they are not met, we are not going to vote for you. But there's still a long way to go. I would like to acknowledge that we have a way of doing politics, but we have yielded so much positive results, even in terms of our advocacy and just pushing, or even trying to change how the politicians or the elected candidates do their business in terms of representing the issues that really matter. For example,
to young women mm-hmm. and to women in general.
Ian, you made mention earlier as you were speaking about some court cases or court challenges, cases that are before the court where I think it was the issue to do with braille material and things like that. Mm-hmm. The fact that, you know, often we hear urgent applications being brought because, you know, it's a hot political issue. Is this not an urgent issue? Is it being given the urgency that it deserves? Or again, is this another example of how this is not an important thing because we're just 3 weeks away? When will, if there were no braille materials, if they're not being, I mean, we keep hearing talk, huge debate about have ballot papers been printed. If they have indeed been printed, then clearly this, we've missed the boat.
The major issue that is happening there, Zeku always say, resources are not permitting. You know, this is something that we are used to, even from our constitution. It says we provide A, B, C, D, but resources permitting. So I would like to believe that there always come a point where people will say, we wanted to, but we are limited with the resources. So I believe it is always an issue of trying to find scapegoats and trying to escape what is happening exactly on the ground. And right now, I don't see any light coming because we are, like rightfully said, that we're only 3 weeks away from the elections. And if they failed to do that for the past 4 or 5 years, how are they going to make it happen in the next three weeks? So it's always a challenge now. How then are we going to be given attention in so areas? And to add on and agreeing to what my fellow panelists are saying here, when you look at women, particularly women with disabilities, they have what I can say, they've a double burden. That one of being a woman first, the second one of being someone with a disability. Because the perspective that the society is going to view you with is very, very different from what they're going to view from the others. I would like to believe that comrades like a Marceline Wiza from Goromonzi has really had a challenge because she's female. And she had to stand up and say, you know what, despite my disability, despite my gender, I'm going to bring something to you. Mm-hmm. So it really needs that courage, and it also needs a society with a character and attitude that is positive in terms of receiving people with disabilities in participating. When they campaign, when they do whatever they do, people should look at their ability, people should look at their capacity, not of how they're appearing like. Not of this person is female or this person is male, but it has to be based on what they're saying. And I also believe that when it comes to issues of you know, giving immediate attention, I would say this election period has been really a disappointing one on this, on the element of inclusivity, because we have had all sorts of adverts. Even when we were having adverts, it was also a challenge after some DPOs made some noise that, you know what, Parko advert has got, guys, come and register. There is no even disability inclusivity, you know, there is not that element being mentioned. Kuti, everyone is welcome. People with disabilities, you can do A, B, C, D. But there are always challenges. People will travel long distances. Some of the wheelchairs were not accessible. Some of the personnel that you meet there was not prepared or was not in a position to help you. So true. The preparedness was always a challenge. And it also reflects on our country is having an attitude towards that.
Let me ask you this, Isabel, because you obviously are representing a political party here, and we hear a lot of the time, and again, it's coming to the attention that's been given. We hear a lot of the time that, you know, this international mission has come, observers are here, they have met stakeholders, they've met political parties. Are they also engaging some of these marginalized groups, the women, the disabled, and things like that, to hear these issues and to pay attention to them?
I have met election observers, but I went there under a political party. Mm-hmm. I haven't heard of election of observers making time to go and consult these marginalized groups. Mm-hmm. Because I think they think that these marginalized groups are also included in political parties.
Mm-hmm.
So when they, I actually remember the meeting we had with the COMESA delegation. They were surprised that, because it was the three of us, it was myself, Linda Masarira, and Nixon Nyigadzino. So our team had two women and mm-hmm. one guy. They were surprised. They said this is a breath of fresh air, because usually we are just getting men mm-hmm. coming here and telling us what's happening in political parties.
Mm-hmm.
So that also made it very apparent that these people have not heard the voice of the marginalized, or have not heard the voice of the women mm-hmm. in particular when it comes to election issues, apart from just meeting political parties.
Mm-hmm.
Then I want to say, bad leaders are elected by good people who do not vote.
Mm-hmm.
Whenever we talk about voting and we do not go and vote as women, how then will we be able to get the change which we are clamoring for? We will not get it because we can only get it once we vote. So it's a welcome development that we have more women who have registered to vote. But are they going to go out and vote on the particular day? Because once we have these statistics, these big statistics of women registering to vote and then not coming out to vote on the particular day of the election, then we are not going anywhere. The other thing is, in Zimbabwe, we have a followership crisis. Mm-hmm. We might have not so perfect leaders because no one is perfect anyway, but the followers we have as leaders are really letting us down because the followers are not really holding the leaders accountable for their actions. So once we have leaders doing as they please with just that notion that I will deal with them when I want them to vote for me, then we'll always have the same conversation even next election.
Isabel, I was going to say as you were speaking that it has been said on previous programs and by previous guests that I've had here that women don't necessarily vote for other women. What do you say to that?
That is true. Mm-hmm. It is true in the sense that women have to be conscientized because we're coming from a society where we thought the best leaders should be men. So conscientizing them first as women should come first because if we do not convince them that as women we actually have the same merit, we actually have the same capacity as the men, because what only differentiates me with a man are our reproductive organs. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, in terms of mental capacity, we are just the same. So we are coming from a society where patriarchy and misogyny is still very real. Mm-hmm. We have to first work on the women so that they actually appreciate a fellow woman when a fellow woman comes to them and says, please vote for me, because they can do the same thing which a man has been doing all along. And I actually want to stress this point that we are not, this fight is not against men, mm-hmm. but it is against the system. Mm-hmm. So we are not against men, but the men unfortunately happen to be beneficiaries of this system. So coming to the men and telling them that we want to change the status quo is obviously going to have some resistance because they are benefiting from it. But we need to change this narrative. True. Because as women, there is nothing which we cannot do which men can do better. We can actually do things better than men, if I may say so myself.
I had an opportunity to speak to one of the presidential candidates, a female presidential candidate. She insists that, what Zimbabwe needs at this point in time is a mother, and that she's one of the few that are uniquely positioned to do that. She says, women know what it feels like to be at home with a child who is not going to school, and so that's one of her key areas. So clearly there is that sense that maybe it's time to change things up and try something different here. Let's put a mother in charge. I say this because, you said something that was, very insightful earlier when we were speaking, where you said, look, people look at disabled candidates and they say, look, what can he offer? But, mm-hmm. I would look at it and say, look, that person is a father, is a parent, yeah. is an employee, wherever they're employed. So if they're able to do that job, if they're able to be a parent, if they're able to do whatever to get by in life, yeah. Surely there is something that they have to offer. They're as competent and as qualified as everyone else. Let me read a couple, as I mentioned, I promised I would read a couple of contributions that have come through. Luis Matutu says, In as much as I may, I appreciate the ladies' views, I think it's more to do with financial empowerment, and women should also be able to support their own. Thank you so much, Luis Matutu, for that contribution. I want to read a couple of more here. from listeners getting in touch. Obviously, 0731-168-045 is the WhatsApp number. Get in touch with us and have your contribution here. And the yeko hold ama leaders accountable. Aishande munomu Zimbabwe. You just made that point earlier about followership. Because my leaders actually do not accept constructive criticism. They are just too cocky. That is coming from my tutu in Bulawayo. Anzi, here's someone saying, Anzi, my wife, Angum Zimayakata, voti, Anzi Zakafanana, Tinongo Tambura one. So, you know, whether I vote or not, it's going to be the same thing. Point there about leaders thinking perhaps that because they are leaders, they are smarter than everyone else. I don't know. But those are some of the contributions. We'll take a few more later. But your response to some of these issues that has been raised, you said, bad leaders are voted by people who, good people who don't vote. Yeah. Here's someone saying, whether I vote or not, it really doesn't change my circumstances. I'm still going to buy bread at the same price tomorrow. I'm still going to face the same challenges. So really,
that's the mentality which we need to change as Zimbabweans. Mm-hmm. Because once you do not vote, you are not supposed to complain when things do not go your way. You are being given an opportunity to change things, but you are deciding, you are making a conscious decision not to take part in voting because you think it will not make a difference. Why don't you try and vote for a woman? Vote for a woman because a woman is saying she can do better. Because for the past 37 years, we've had men at the helm of things. And look at our country right now. Look at our economy right now. We are all suffering. Why don't we just change this election? Give Tokozani Kupe a chance. Give her the presidium and see what she has to offer.
Memory, I want to, I'm not sure if I've interpreted it the way the listener intended, or certainly if you've interpreted it, mm-hmm. but listener said it's about financial emancipation, it's about empowerment. Mm-hmm. Women who perhaps have made their way, have made their name for themselves, are earning enough, or have started their own business, do you think that they'll command more respect, that the perception towards them will be different if they are participating?
If women are financially
if a woman empowered, who is perceived to be successful, to be financially empowered, and will they be perceived differently? Will they command the respect of people who ordinarily are dismissive of women?
Absolutely, mm-hmm. absolutely. One of the key challenges that young women, even Bella, can tell you is campaigning is expensive.
True.
Yeah, it is. It's very expensive. And if we look at the means of production and who owns and who is wealthy in society, the majority of them are men, mm-hmm. because of several reasons. So absolutely, if women cry or complain or put that on the table, that if only they were financially independent or capacitated to run their campaigns the way they want them to be, they would stand higher chances of doing better than their male counterparts. So I'm not arguing there that absolutely it's a contributing factor, but not entirely. Mm-hmm. There are women or even men that have won elections with a very few resources. They became creative on how they are campaigning, and they leverage on their communities, and in terms of support, their communities supported them without any resources or few resources. So I would like to agree with that, or with one of the listeners.
Okay.
I would also want to add on that kushaya, kwakatongooma, and poverty inokuyisa at the mercy of who has money at that mm-hmm. point. So if you are coming from a position yekuti you do not have that privilege of having financial independence, you will always be at the mercy of the person who holds the resources in their hand. So you then see that even if you have a female candidate and you have poor followers, these poor followers will be manipulated by the person who has the most resources. Right now, Zanu PF will always win purportedly win in rural constituencies because vanoenda nema bags of rice and millimeal vonopa vanhu. It's vote buying, but people will accept it because avana. So once women have more at their disposal, once women have more resources at their disposal, it means more women who actually have this confidence of taking leadership positions. Because as she has already said, campaigning is expensive. You cannot campaign kana usina mari.
Because we're running out of time, I will hand over to Ian now and say, I just want to ask you one final question. Obviously, a lot of the attention and a lot of these issues are being raised now because we're on the eve of an election. Is there no danger? Are you not, guilty may not be the right word, but, you know, of relaxing, basically, that after July 30, another 4 years, there won't be much noise or agitation made about some of these issues. And then when we are on the about to have another election, you'll start raising issues again and looking for attention.
Okay, thank you for the question. But just to be precise on that one, from my organization, we are a group of young persons with disabilities who do disability rights advocacy. We do not make noise when it comes to a particular event that is about to happen, but we've been making noise for the past 7 or 8 years. For instance, we've had the issue of the UNCRPD, the United Nations Conventions on the Rights of Persons with Disabilities, which was opened for signatory in 2006, and our country only signed in September 2013. And our organization has been one of those who has been, you know, pushing for the ratification of that convention since 2010. So it actually took us 3 years to see that convention being signed up. And right now we're pushing for the domestication of that UNCRPD which was signed. So for us to say as soon as elections are done we're going to be silent, no. The war continues. That's the struggle, because when you want to change the mentality of someone, it has to be a war, and it has to be something that they're willing to take at length. So from our organization and from the perspective of the DPOs that we have been linking up with, we are going to take up the challenge. We're going to continue making noise. Because for us, mind you, for us to have those two senators in parliament, it was also after some noise was made. So eventually we are continuing with the process that we have already embarked on. So I would also urge my fellow comrades out there that, you know what, even if things doesn't happen our way this election, we still have another chance. We still have to do more. We don't have to give up balls that we have failed this time. And I would like to appeal to everyone else who is listening and everyone else who is in the studio right now, because for persons with disabilities to make it, they need you, they need me. We really need to make a collective effort to make sure that the change really comes.
Ian Mambe, I want to thank you for that and for coming through to the program and certainly highlighting and raising the fact that there are a number of candidates who have said, look, we are going to participate, quota or no quota. We have a part to play and have not shirked away from that responsibility or shied away because of their disabilities. And we wish them all the best. And as you say, as much as, you know, let's go out there and vote for them if they are the better candidate. And let's not certainly put their disability first. Let's look at their substance, the content of what they are putting forward and what they represent. So thank you so much, Ian, for coming through. I also want to thank Memory Kadaoshi from the Institute for Young Women Development, Isabel Munzura from the MDCT. Thank you. MDC. Thank you so much for coming through, MDCT. We want to wish you all the best too.
Thank you.
In your rural constituency, and hopefully we'll have a discussion. You know, this program is for MPs, so maybe at one point we'll come back as a natural, substantive MP, honourable. Indeed, I heard earlier when we started the program, you've been called honourable, and you were saying you received. So certainly, like I said, we wish you all the best, and to all Zimbabweans, we say, look, you know, as we go towards the elections, once again, we continue to preach peace, and vote wisely and go out there and do vote. Mm-hmm. Most importantly, yes. If you've registered to vote, then let's go vote. There yes. And vote and participate. Have your say. Ask the MP only on ZFM Stereo, my station, your station. We'll bring you this program in conjunction with the Southern African Parliamentary Support Trust. Thank you so much for tuning in and for following us on various social media platforms. For those who got in touch, a very extra special thank you. Up next, Health Matters with Larry. So be sure to stay tuned for that and a whole lot more. Good night.